Welcome to Quest for Gold. I'm Ryan Burrow. We are 335 days away from the Summer Games in Paris. It may seem like a long ways off, but we are in the height of competitions for the numerous American athletes hoping to punch their tickets to Paris 2024. Let's start in Budapest.
Here comes Sha'Carri Richardson! Sha'Carri's done it!
Highlight courtesy of NBC Sports. Sha'Carri Richardson was in the ninth lane of the 100-meter final. Not the ideal location for the female track star, but she beat the favored Jamaicans and took the title as fastest woman in the world this week. It's her first major global race since being suspended in 2021 for a positive marijuana test. You may remember that forced her to miss the Tokyo Games. Richardson didn't even qualify for the Worlds last year. But she's not the only American with gold around her neck this week. Noah Lyles set a new world record in the men's 100-meter dash, cruising to gold. Katie Moon won coal gold in the women's pole vault finals. Ryan Krauser won the men's shot put. Loggy Tosaga-Collins won the women's discus. And the U.S. also took gold in the mixed 4x400-meter relay. Competitions will continue through the weekend. Another round of Worlds is going on this weekend in Spain, the Rhythmic Gymnastics World Championships. Olympic qualifying bids are on the line. Friend of the podcast, Evita Grishkenis, is out there for Team USA, as is Lily Mizuno. We did get a good luck text into her. She responded, thanks for thinking of her. Hopefully, we'll have a chance to chat with her in the coming weeks. Evita was in the Tokyo Games. Meanwhile, the U.S. Artistic Gymnastics Championships are underway in San Jose. Both the men and women are competing with the goal of qualifying for the Worlds coming up this fall. This will be Simone Biles' second competition since pulling out of the Tokyo Games in 2021. Meanwhile, starting this weekend in the Philippines, Team USA men's basketball will try and punch a team bid to qualify for Paris. Now, it's likely that will happen, but the names of who will be doing it aren't the names you're used to seeing dressed in the red, white, and blue. I had a chance to talk with Joe Varden, who's covering the FIBA World Cup in Manila for The Athletic this week, for a preview of the tournament and to give us some info on the team the U.S. is trotting out on the court 11 months away from the games.
The pessimistic side of me views this as Team USA throwing its B or C squad together to see how desperate they'll be for superstars next summer in Paris. But the optimist in me sees Steve Kerr, Mark Few, Eric Spoelstra, this like all-star team of coaches getting together to craft something that could be really cool over the next year or so. When you look at this team right now, which way should I be leaning, the optimistic or the pessimistic way?
Well, I really liked this team from the start because I knew that the older American NBA All-Star was just not going to be available for this year. And the reason for this is a number of years ago, FIBA decided to, instead of having the World Cup 2 years before the Olympics, they wanted to have it the year before the Olympics. So now it's on the same cycle as the FIFA World Cup soccer. But this is a problem in basketball that we don't have in the global football game, which is the NBA season is so long and, you know, the stress on the bodies is so great. We have players, you know, who take nights off from the regular season as it is, that it's very difficult to ask players to commit two summers in a row, especially if they're on playoff teams. So between that and the fact that this event was in Asia, here in the Philippines, which is where I am now, after the previous World Cup and the Olympics also being in Asia, they just weren't going to get players who had just played for Team USA. So with all that being said, I thought they went about it the right way. They got a couple guys who were all-stars in the past year, and they have a number of players who are rightfully considered to be up-and-comers. None of them have played for Team USA before on the national team level. So they're hungry, they're new, they have a bunch of stuff to prove, both in this and then also still in the NBA. And they put the right coaching staff around them. So I think that you want to look at this from a positive perspective. It's a feel-good story. There's a number of players that I think are easy to root for. And something that I've just learned and noticed, having covered Team USA since 2019 and seeing the reaction to this group now, I think when we as a country send the player, the nine-time All-Star, the 15-time All-Star, to play in one of these tournaments, they are so expected to win to the point of being dominant. And when they don't, it's a problem. And so there's a stale factor. Like if they win, they were expected to, and if they lose, they stink. Whereas you don't have that with this team. So all those are good things. That being said, there's no guarantee that the Americans win this. I think there is a guarantee they go very deep in the tournament. They will not finish seventh like they did at the 2019 World Cup. But once they get to that semifinal here in the middle of the first week of September, any number of those teams are on par with or close enough to the Americans that they could win a 40-minute game. So it's a great team to get behind. It's a long answer to get to your point, but it's going to be fun, and then it's going to be stressful in that order.
I mean, for Team USA, obviously, USA basketball wants to win everything, right? They want to win every game. I mean, but is the expectation going into this tournament gold? I mean, is it gold or bust for this team, or are they kind of looking at it differently than maybe previous years?
No. It's certainly they're always in this to win. The expectation to win is still there, but I just think there is a greater awareness of how difficult this is. And then from a program perspective, they're not going to finish anything other than first and look at it as something positive or a stepping stone, anything like that. That would not be the case. There is no solace in a second anything other than first for USA in basketball. But I just don't think that there is this outsized unfair expectation on the team. Everybody will be sad if they lose, American fans will be sad. I just think by and large, there's a greater understanding of how this works, how good these other teams are, and that this team is new.
Sure. I mean, we don't, I think the fear from the casual fan is you don't want to slip into the 2004 scenario, right? Where all of a sudden it's hard to get people to play, and you get stunned, and it's like, oh my gosh, what's going on? Reevaluate. Then you've got the redeem team, and now things seem to be back on the right path again. Are the NBAers who may play in Paris, are they keeping a close eye on this? I mean, is this kind of an opportunity for Steve Kerr to show what he's capable of, and maybe use this as a recruiting tool come Paris?
Well, yeah, I mean, so I think when you start with Steve through this exhibition season that's now complete, the Americans went 5-0. They had not gone unscathed in exhibition play since 2016. So right off the bat, he's off to a great start. He really seems to have a feel for how to do this. He's just assembled arguably the greatest coaching staff in the history of basketball, with Spo, Ty Lue, and Mark Few all on the same staff. I don't think Steve needs to try out, and I don't think he needs to convince anybody who is an A-lister, so to speak, that they should want to play next year. I think there is a certain appeal about, flying to Paris and playing on, Team USA / Nike's dime and going there for 2.5 weeks. That I actually think there's going to be a scenario where Steve and Grant Hill and Sean Ford tell somebody who's got a pedigree, tell them no.
Really?
I really do. And I also think that the better this team performs here at the Philippines, the greater chance there is that players on this team do make it to Paris. I think when you try to think about who are the A-listers that you'll see in Paris, I think you can safely say that Steph Curry is a possibility. Durant is a possibility. And then, you look at Tatum, Booker, and then, probably Bam Adebayo. So that's five. That's not quite half the team. Does LeBron want to do it at age 39? If he does, then you look at him for six. Draymond Green is a possibility just because of his Olympic pedigree. So maybe he's the sixth guy. There's been some rumor about an Anthony Davis interest. I don't know. You know, they're still chasing Joel Embiid to get him to play for Team USA. But I think off this team right away, Jaren Jackson Jr., I think, makes it to the next year because of how important shot blocking is and how few capable two-way American bigs there are. I think Anthony Edwards is going to emerge as a super player. So that's two. You know, Jalen Brunson and Tyrese Halliburton are both possibilities because they're big, fit guards, and that's what you need in international play. So that's three or four. And then, you know,
these guys are playing. These guys are going to be on the court trying to make the team for 2024, obviously. Then
But
I don't see a scenario where Bobby Portis Jr. I don't see a scenario where Bobby Portis is on that team, but I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong on that, but
I don't think so. The last 2 years have included players who are not even starters, that they fill a role. And that is why they went to Bobby this year. They wanted Bobby, who is a sixth man caliber player, to be able to come off the bench and give them minutes in the role that he's giving them. So I guess you could see that, but the point is they're going to have so many options at their disposal that I think it's going to be more of a mixture of the really good players off this team and the really good players who would make good FIBA players anyway, who want to sign up in 2024.
I gotcha. And so what is the deal with the other teams all these other international teams, are they in kind of the same boat right now? Are they throwing their superstars out there? Or are they getting a rest too?
No, I think by and large, the situation is still these other countries, their players play in these events. Giannis Antetokounmpo had surgery. He tried to play. He couldn't do it. Jamal Murray for Canada showed up to practice to try to play. His body just is not ready to go yet. So he had to back out. The two stars, if you will, who backed out without really having a health reason would be Nikola Jokic, and that really hurt Serbia. And then Victor Wembanyama, who was going to play for France until Greg Popovich talked him out of it. So those are kind of the examples. But otherwise, Canada is loaded with NBA talent. The French are always tough, and they bring back a very similar team to the one that beat USA in an Olympic early round game and then almost took the gold medal. Spain is tough. They have a couple NBA players. Germany's really good. They have four NBA players. Australia, I can't remember if I've said them, they have a ton of NBA guys. So, and then Luka Doncic, you know, one of the very best players in the NBA. He's playing for Slovenia. So it's a very, very good tournament with really good teams, a bunch of stars, and an American team that's deeper than everybody.
What is at stake here? Is this an automatic bid?
That's a great question. I'm glad you asked it. So other than, you know, the glory of winning a World Cup, you are playing for an automatic entry into the Olympics. In some cases, it's the top two teams from each continent, like depending on which continents we're talking about, that get the automatic bid plus the host country. So France is in. They can't take one of the two bids. The Americans would have to finish in the top two out of the teams from North and South America. And then you kind of go, like I said, there's varying degrees with the different continents, but yes, that is what is on the line. Qualifying for the Olympics without performing at the World Cup is much more difficult. The qualifiers are at awkward times and anything can go wrong. So you really want to try to take care of business now.
Yeah. So if they were to fall into the same trap they fell into, was that 2019, they would have more tournaments then that they'd have to line up to try to get qualified then.
No. So the Americans, for as lousy as it went from a World Cup perspective in 2019, they still finished second out of the America teams. So they still qualified for Tokyo out of China. And so it's, you know, they're going to like it would be such a setback and such a surprise if they didn't at least finish in the top two, that they would have lost to one or multiple teams that had no business beating them. And then we'd be having different conversations. So I just don't see that happening. And I see the Paris ticket being punched.
Okay. So tell me some of the storylines you've been following out there. Well, what are some of the things that we should be watching? A lot of these games are going to be super early in the morning for us, so we're not going to get a ton of viewage of these guys. What are you seeing from them so far? What are some of the things we should follow?
Yeah, I mean, so the way I'm going about this, by and large, has been to understand that these games are at awkward times and they're in the summer anyway. So while the interest is high, it's harder for the fan to watch this game. So I'm going to each game, like almost simply to do the best job I can, telling you all what happened and showing you all what happened and trying to give a little context as to why. If you get a chance to watch, I think it's fun to see how Team USA looks like the Golden State Warriors and then ways they don't. I think it's fun to watch the defensive schemes that they throw at the better teams with Ty Lue, arguably the NBA's best defensive architect, drawing up these defenses here with Team USA. I think you have to watch for Anthony Edwards. He led the team in scoring at nearly 20 points per game during the exhibition season. Does he take that leap and use this World Cup experience to become a superstar the way that Kevin Durant did in 2010? It's shaping up to be that way. I think you say similar things about Jalen Brunson. And then I have been watching and am in awe, basically, of how good Austin Reeves is. You know, he just signed this four-year deal worth like 50-something million with the Lakers, which, you know, to you and I, that's generational money. And it is to him, too. But it's going to end up being a bargain, I think, for the Lakers. And Reeves has just been awesome on this team in so many ways. And I think he's going to use this experience as a springboard. So, you know, I've had a lot of fun being around this team and talking to these guys every day. The access has been much better for a reporter than it is at almost any point in the end during the NBA season. So it's been fun to get a chance to tell these guys stories and learn about them as people. The story that I just wrote on the day you and I are talking, it was about Eric Spoelstra, who is a first generation Filipino American, and being able to bring this team here and experience the culture that was in his household because his mom was born here, I think is pretty cool. So, and we're just going to keep working on that and keep telling the stories of who these guys are as the next generation of NBA stars, hopefully. So, yeah, definitely reasons to follow.
Always interesting, too, because as we know, going into 2008, when you had Dwayne Wade and LeBron James and Chris Bosh all kind of getting together and, you know, essentially forming what would become the Miami Heat's championship team, these guys are now together. They're on this trip together. I wonder how many of those kind of conversations, hey, you should come play for Memphis. Hey, you should come play for India, for the Pacers. You know, I wonder how many of those kind of conversations are going on. They're obviously getting more comfortable with each other.
Well, so this is an interesting discussion. And earlier this summer, I reported that the Heatles talk between those guys didn't begin in 2008, which would be 2 years before they got together. It began at the Tokyo Championships, which what would now be the World Cup. In 2006 is when Jerry Colangelo and Mike Krzyzewski said they heard in the lunchroom LeBron and Wade, you know, even Anthony, who didn't end up doing it, talking about one day getting together. And if you think about how that relates to now, like we're in a World Cup, not an Olympics, and all of these guys currently, like really all of them, are signed to long-term lucrative extensions. So all these guys are under contract now. The only two who you could say aren't on that kind of deal are the two rookies, Banchero and Kessler. The way the NBA is set up, they're going to be extended to very large contracts by their teams, you know, so they're going to be off the market for a while. So you don't look for next year, next summer, or even the summer after that to see like, oh, what's the Team USA like linkage to whatever free agent goes where. But it's going to be years down the road. The relationships that are fostered now on this barnstorming tour we've been in on, how does that impact the 2027 class free agency? Sure. And I bet there we will see a partnership. I do.
Very interesting. What's it like in Manila? I've never been there before.
It is wild. And I just the energy is frenetic. The traffic is unlike anything you've ever seen. And I've spent as much time in LA and New York as anybody. Today, for instance, the team bus, that I was on, we went from the team hotel. We were headed to practice. Now, thankfully, the players and coaches were on a much earlier bus because they had to go for a team picture, but the rest of the support staff was headed to practice and they left 45 minutes before practice was supposed to start. And I was on the bus and we had a police escort, and the escort was entirely futile, could not break through the five lanes of bumper to bumper traffic. And it's so nuts that there are thousands of motorcycles just riding in between cars in the streets. And for the first time in my life, I saw motorists honking at the cop to get out of their way. It was incredible. So beyond that, it's just a mixture of some very clean and beautiful areas of downtown surrounded by lots of poverty in the surrounding villages. The people are so kind, so friendly, and so happy that we are here. You know, basketball is religion here. There's no doubt about that. And the fervor, for Team USA, for Luka, and then for the home team, the Filipinos, Jordan Clarkson's on the team. They feel like they have a chance to get out of pool play. So it's an exciting time, I think, in an exciting little island country.
Very cool. Very cool. Well, I hope you have fun out there. I know you're kind of chasing down stories and stuff like that, but I hope you're getting a chance to enjoy some of the atmosphere a little bit.
Yeah, no, I am. And it's, you know, I've been with this team since August 3rd, the first day in Las Vegas, and haven't missed a day. Been all over the world. I've thoroughly enjoyed it. It's my favorite part of this job is this beat. I'm taking the opportunity for what it is.
And you're a Cleveland guy, right? So you got to go back and cover the Cavs once the season starts up. Did I read that right?
No, I do still live in Cleveland. I'm not assigned to the Cavs, but I will certainly, you know, be poking my head in there every now and then, and you know, seeing old friends and also seeing, you know, the teams that come in, and especially the guys on this team as they come through, will definitely be in there to say hello.
We'll see how the FIBA World Cup plays out for Team USA. They haven't won it since 2014. As of right now, there are four Americans who have qualified for the 2024 Olympics: swimmer Katie Grimes, sailor Daniela Moroz, and climbers Colin Duffy and Emma Hunt. We'll be back next week for another edition of Quest for Gold and hopefully some results from this busy weekend. I'm Ryan Burr. We'll see you then.